Hey, good morning, Mike Causey. Welcome to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Delighted to have you along for the ride. My guests today are Tom Temin and Andy Medici. Tom is the morning drive anchor for Federal News Radio. Andy is a senior writer for the Federal Times. Lauren Larson is being our producer. But other than that, this is the first time in a long time we've had an all-guy show. You know, so let's see what happens with that. You know, but both of these gentlemen bring a lot of knowledge to the table.
And it's all going to be clean.
Keep it clean. Yeah, that's the number one rule. And we do have the dump button as well, too. I'm going to start out with Tom. Tom, you know, you've been covering this federal beat for a long, long time. And with Federal News Radio for a good while. And you understand the federal workers, federal executives before coming here. But now that you've been here, you come in with some pretty awful hours to do the morning drive. But you've been here a long time. You talk to people 5 days a week. You interview them. And you've got to have some new insights about the federal workforce. So, and this is always a nebulous Zen-like question, but what's changed since you've been doing this?
Well, I think what's changed is that federal employees at the managerial, the senior executive level, and below, even program management level, seem to have, with each passing decade, each passing year, just a little bit less discretion about what they can talk about the freedom they have to discuss their programs. We see this through, you know, frankly, through downturns we get from having people on the show, or inviting them on the show to talk about what we think is the most ordinary program. Just give us an update on this, because we are the inside baseball radio station talking about the federal government to federal employees and contractors. But there seems to be much more distrust of allowing the average Fed to talk by the politicals that are in power. And that's not something that originated with this particular administration. I think they're just on a pathway that started many years ago to have less faith in thinking that federal government employees can say the right thing.
Well, you know, we were talking before the show about advances in technology and how people like yourself, you're working harder than ever before. And it seems to me, I see this with government types, contractors. You go to a meeting and people, I don't think they're being rude, I don't think they're being crazy, but they're on their smartphones and they're texting and getting, and it just seems like people are working more, and I'm not sure they're getting more done.
Well, I think that's probably emblematic of the whole economy. I mean, people do work all the time now, thanks to having availability in a mobile sense of all this stuff. I mean, let's face it, we all check the email before turning out the lamp by the bed at night. I mean, I know I do. And so, yeah, I think feds are caught up in a general economic way. And maybe that's the American way. We've always been a hardworking, sort of Calvinist type of economy. And so now there are tools that let knowledge workers work all the time. And so, I think feds do, you know, to some extent get knocked for not working hard. And it was the recent case of the Patent and Trademark Office employees getting paid to telework when they weren't really working and so forth. But, you know, that's the kind of example that I think the exception that proves the rule. And, you know, there's anytime you have a population of a couple of million people, you're going to find some that are, you know, at the extreme end of maybe slacking or something. But my experience is that the federal workforce works as hard as any other workforce that I know of.
Well, that was an interesting story in the Post, but there were relatively few sources. I think it was three or four people had complained to an IG about it. So that does not necessarily a scandal make. Andy, this time last year, we had just come off a round of furloughs. Some people had been furloughed for 8 or 9 days. It was so severe on so many people's budgets that FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund, that Fed's Helping Feds charity, had run out of money to make no interest loans to people. Now, here we are, August 2014, quite different. In August 2013, we were looking at a possible government shutdown, and it was considered serious talk. As it turned out, it happened. Some said it couldn't happen, shouldn't happen, but it did. So where are we right now, August 2014? None of the budgets, and correct me if I'm wrong, none of the budgets have been approved, and it's almost fiscal 2015. October 1 is New Year's Day for Uncle Sam.
You know, that's correct. You have a summer recess for Congress that runs right into September, and once they get back, there's only about 10 working days for Congress to approve any sort of budget. And I think right now what a lot of members of Congress and senators are hoping for, at least trying for, is just some sort of continuing resolution that would take them past the election, get them into December, and then try to hash out maybe either another continuing resolution or some sort of omnibus bill that they can carry through into the next year and just let another Congress deal with it. And even though none of the bills have been passed right now, you know, a continuing resolution with maybe a 1% bump or flat might be a distinct possibility coming up.
Okay. We'll get into the sequestration thing later. But Tom, I was thinking about, you know, among your many duties, you and executive editor Jason Miller probably get out and go to more conferences and confabs than most of us here at the station. And you know, you're out there speaking, you're talking to people. I don't ever remember, I was talking to somebody the other day, there was a morale that said government, a study that showed that government morale was low. And it seems to me every study I've ever seen going back to the 1900s is government morale is very low. How low can it go? Is it that low? Is it worse than ever?
I don't think it is that low. And I know what the surveys say, and we read the surveys every year, and we dutifully report on the surveys every year. And these are statistically valid surveys. I mean, the numbers they think they're reporting are correct, as opposed to a lot of the business-conducted surveys that have very small samples. You know, the ones that are put out by OPM, their annual viewpoint survey, is an accurate survey, and yet it adds up to something I don't really buy. I mean, the feds you talk to individually are enthusiastic about their work, and I think to the extent that they focus on the work and kind of ignore the noise that is surrounding, it's almost like if you work in the media, like we do. And, you know, we all go to dinner parties and cocktail parties and interact with friends who have things to say about the media. Well, if you listen to that enough, you'd think you're really a horrible person for working in the media. And there are media I like, media I don't like, and that's true for everybody. So I think feds are pretty good at filtering out that stuff. And I don't sense at a one-to-one level that morale is all that terrible.
I think it's really a signal. I think what people use these surveys for is to voice displeasure during a certain part of time. I think Tom's right. A lot of feds love their jobs. They are here for the mission. They are here because they love what they do. But when they're given a chance to show leaders and management areas that they don't like, they take that chance. And I think a lot of those surveys reflect that kind of sentiment.
Well, I wonder too if there's something in the public about this, because if you ask people, what do you think of Congress? The approval rating is even lower than ours in the media is. They're below us. They loathe the institution. They think it's a bunch of bums. They should disband and start over again. Yet they keep electing these same people.
That's
right. You can't blame gerrymandering for everything.
Yeah, 90% of Congress is reelected every time. And it's almost like junk food or television. Everybody professes to be against junk food. And yet look how much of it is sold and consumed every year. And, you know, anyone that says, I never watch television.
Uh-huh.
Yet television is more successful than ever, you know, because
somebody's watching it.
Somebody, I mean, well, I admit it. I like junk food and TV, especially in combination. But yes, I think that that phenomenon is true.
Andy?
Yeah, I think, you know, asking people whether they like Congress is asking people whether they like taxes. And the answer is universally going to be pretty negative. But at the end of the day, if you ask people whether they want a military and a government that functions, they're going to say yes. So I think that's, once again, it's a signal. People want to voice their displeasure. They don't like Congress. They don't like what Congress is doing. But given a chance, you know, do they like their congressman or do they want to reelect them? Sure.
Well, I know I do not like dentists and I don't like lawyers. That said, I have the greatest dentist in North America and I have the best lawyer. Now, I'm either very lucky or maybe I'm generalizing the thing.
Or you could sue your dentist and then find out what they're really made of.
That's what we get. And Lauren Larson is giving us the hook here. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com.
Here's David Ambrose, Chief Security Officer, Chief Privacy Officer, Bureau of the Fiscal Service, Department of the Treasury, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by HP.
The future of cyber attacks will continue to be a cat and mouse game, unfortunately. So we need to get out in front of them, try to understand where they're coming from and who they're trying to target, and then mitigate them as best as possible. In the public and private sector, collaboration is key.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
What you don't know can hurt you. Focusing on what's most important to your enterprise now and in the future? Vital. HP Continuous Monitoring can give you the edge you're looking for, providing a closer view of your current operational status, including where you're vulnerable, in real time so you can better prioritize and manage potential and actual issues. HP can help you create a more secure, more aware, more prepared environment that won't leave you in the dark. See what you're missing at hp.com/go/cybersecurity.
Come experience game day the Navy way by purchasing your seats for Navy football. The Mids open up the season with the 6th-ranked Ohio State Buckeyes Saturday, August 30th at 12 noon at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. Take part in game days throughout the year as season ticket packages are on sale now for 5 games in Annapolis and perennial power Notre Dame at FedEx Field on Saturday, November 1st. Get your tickets today by calling 1-800-US-4-NAVY or go to NavySports.com. Navy football. Game day, the Navy way.
This week's IT Enterprise Report is brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Plans for the 11th annual Cybersecurity Awareness Month are underway at the Homeland Security Department. DHS will partner up with the National Cybersecurity Alliance to offer different events each week catered to federal agencies, private individuals, and private companies. Week 1 will focus on the basics of cybersecurity and will feature advice from the Homeland Security Department's Stop, Think, Connect initiative. Starting in Week 2, the topics get a little more specific. You can learn about how to develop more secure IT products, including cloud systems. And in Week 4, the theme is cybersecurity for small and medium-sized businesses. DHS and the National Cybersecurity Alliance hope the outreach will strengthen and build cybersecurity best practices for both private companies and federal agencies.
General Dynamics IT, providing secure federal cloud solutions. Avoid lock-in and migrate intelligently with a trusted partner who can deliver your enterprise as a service. GDIT.com/cloud.
Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington are a positive place for kids. They support the development of young people who are most in need. Hi, I'm Renthia Ross, Vice President, GEICO Insurance Company. GEICO supports youth organizations that make graduation from high school and furthering skills for work or going to college a priority, like America's Promise and their partners, Boys and Girls Clubs of America. Help a kid grow up great. Give to the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington at bgcgw.org.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. And I'm reminded by Tom Timmon that you're actually listening here on 1500 AM. FederalNewsRadio.com is streaming. But anyhow we have you, we're glad to have you. And talking with Andy Medici from the Federal Times, Tom Timmon, morning anchor here at Federal News Radio. And we're kind of sort of covering the waterfront. Normally we get outside experts and people who know the different facets of government and bring them in, but once in a while it's good to have some just down in the dust reporters come in and tell us what's going on from their perspective. Andy, second largest federal agency, which a lot of people don't even consider a federal agency, is the U.S. Postal Service. It's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It's slimming. It's on a diet, but it's still out there, still a major force. And I know you track it. A couple of things. Can you sort of give us an overview of what's happening at the Postal Service, the Saturday delivery, the idea, the concept of maybe a standalone health plan, a standalone retirement plan, and then these disability compensation? You reported that they're going up the cost, which is the cost of the taxpayer, even as the Postal Service is getting smaller. So how does that work?
Well, you know, you're right. The Postal Service has got about, 485,000 employees. It's huge. Anything it does is a big deal. And for the last couple of years, the Postal Service has basically been locked in a struggle with employee groups, with members of Congress, to cut Saturday mail delivery, to get more flexibility, to lay off more people in its workforce, and to generally reorganize towards what they think is the future, and that's 7-day everyday package delivery, fewer home delivery, more shared boxes, things like that. And a lot of people are interested, and a lot of people are looking. And you're right, the workers' compensation is going up even as the number of employees drops by tens of thousands, by hundreds of thousands. Most of it's because of an aging workforce. And the Postal Service used to put some people who were injured on the job into light duty, into jobs that didn't require that much physical activity. But a lot of those jobs have been automated. You go into a sorting center nowadays, and there are, 1/50th of the number of people there used to be just 10 years ago. So there's a lot less opportunity to put people in those jobs where they can still work and get paid. So a lot of those people just go in and collect workers' compensation for, you know, 60, 90, 120 days. And that's just where we are right now.
Well, and it's the Postal Service has a very high accident rate, in part because of the industrial nature of so many of the functions. If you go through a bulk mail center, you see what the factory is looks like. And also you have people on the road. Well, the most dangerous part of the job is maybe being on the road driving one of those right-hand vehicles for 6 hours a day.
Yeah, the Postal Service is one of the most dangerous civilian agencies to work for. And, you know, you're right, you have letter carriers. We go to every address. The Postal Service goes to every address without fail. And if that takes them into areas that most people wouldn't want to go to, it's just part of the job. And I think a lot of people forget that.
Even if there's a dog there. And I think the Postal Service probably doesn't get credit for all of the tech innovation it's had over the past decades. I remember when they first started the program to have recognition, machine recognition of handwriting, and they are one of the best on earth at doing that. You know, if you go to the Postal Museum that is down over near Capitol Hill, next to Union Station, they have a famous case and a little exhibit there where someone addressed a letter back in the 1930s to Mr. Hot Dog, and it took a lot of human head scratching to realize they were trying to send it to Felix Frankfurter,
of course,
who was at the time. And so, you know, that couldn't happen
Supreme
nowadays
Court Justice,
with handwriting recognition. But on the other hand, a lot of stuff gets there that's badly. That's just one example of the way they've been able to do a lot of automation and a lot of technology innovation. So the question I think Andy raises is, why are there disability claims going through the roof when the workforce is shrinking? And that's a problem I think a lot of disability systems are seeing.
Yeah, and again, it's an aging workforce, so they're more prone to accidents. And, you know, you mentioned the dog bites, and, you know, that's been the scene of comic cartoons for years. But it's a major problem, and, you know, if a Rottweiler or a Staffordshire Terrier comes at your leg, it's not a joke. It's a very serious thing.
Well, I'll tell you a story, though. I have a dog, which, you know, if someone came in and broke in the house, it would roll on its back and ask to have its
show them where the safe is.
Yeah, but being the hours I keep, you know, my shift is generally over at noon, so I'm home a lot of afternoons, and so I see the UPS guy and the FedEx lady. The FedEx lady for my street always brings a dog biscuit whenever something is delivered. Mm. So maybe there ought to be a dog biscuit budget.
The word
for
is
the
out.
Postal Service.
Yeah. Well, it's like school teachers who buy so many of their own supplies. I guess if they want to survive, they will buy Alpo or whatever it takes. Hey, Tom, everybody's tracking the 2015 federal pay raise. It's getting to be a really tricky business. There are a lot of numbers bouncing around out there. Zero is one number. 1% is an option. The military is looking at possibly 1.8. Federal retirees are looking at 1.8, totally by coincidence. And then there is a measure out there by a group of Democratic House members, mostly from the Washington area, to give federal workers 3.3%. So what's a fellow to make of this?
Well, like you say, it's like a whole hand of cards, and which one is going to get pulled and flapped down on the table. But in the absence of a new 2015 budget ratified by regular order and signed by the president, nothing can happen in terms of a congressionally budgeted pay raise. And I think the president has the discretion to go to 1% if he wants. And I guess given that there is an election coming, my best prediction is that there's going to be the 1% administratively, but don't look for anything from Congress anytime soon.
Andy, jump in on this, but I was there when the Federal Comparability Act of 1990 became law, and it was supposed to be, it was like World War I. This was the war to end all wars. This was the pay raise law to end all disputes. The idea was George Bush the first was president. It was a Democratic-controlled Congress, totally bipartisan. They said, let's get the politics out of federal pay raises, and what we'll do is this. Starting with the next president, who turned out to be Bill Clinton, we're going to give federal workers catch-up raises each year. There'll be partial increases so that at the end of 10 years, by around 2000, maybe a little after, federal pay would be comparable to that in the private sector. And since it's locality pay, feds in Houston would get one amount, feds in Portland would get another. First year out of the box, President Clinton came to town. He had been governor of Arkansas. His salary, I think, at the time was something like $43,000 as governor of Arkansas. A lot of his top aides.
Dirt poor.
Well, they made
flat broke.
They made less than the average civil servant in the Washington area, and this had an impression on a lot of those people. Comparability never worked. It never worked to the point where very few people today, myself included, really understand how it works. Andy?
Well, that's one of those things where they passed that bill. It's supposed to set up, as you said, parity between federal employees and the private sector. And it also had a couple other pieces of the bill. Every year, the federal government comes out with a report from the pay agent that says how much federal employees are paid versus the private sector. And every year, that report gets tossed around by members of Congress, usually showing that federal employees are paid far less than the private sector. And I spoke to Representative Steny Hoyer a while ago. He was part of the team of people that pushed that original bill through. He's not happy with the way it's been going. You know, you're right, the very first year, things got derailed, and every year after, we see a bigger discrepancy. And I think a lot of federal employees are upset when they're told that they should maybe be getting a different amount. Members of Congress can't even get together to decide on what kind of pay raise, and you leave it up to President Obama, who does have that discretionary authority. He can give them, you know, a pay raise. He said he's going to give them a 1% pay raise if Congress does nothing.
Yeah, whether you think it's a good law or a bad law, good system or a bad system, it is the law, and they both sides promised to obey it. And then President Clinton came in, looked at the federal scales, and recommended a zero pay raise, and that's how it started. You had this coalition of Republicans and Democrats, but when the president was a Democrat, Steny Hoyer led it. When the president was a Republican, with George Bush, the 43, when he came in, then the Frank Wolf and a Republican group took it over, but it was the same coalition. But the Comparability Pay Act has never been obeyed, right or wrong.
Pretty much not. No, it's a matter of discretion every year, and that gets to the whole problem with congressional promises. When a bill says we're going to do this in 2015, it doesn't mean that it's actually going to happen, or 2016, because the federal government is a cash accounting operation. And so Congress can change whatever it says it's going to do, and no Congress can legally bind a future Congress. And so this is the situation you get into. But there is some discretion for pay raises for individuals within the system. You can get pay raises in place. You can get all kinds of incentive bonuses and performance bonuses. Those don't go away even when there is a 0% pay raise.
Andy, what about those within grade raises? Because I know, to be accurate, when you say federal workers haven't had a raise in 3 years, that's not accurate for a third to as many as a half of them because of the within grade raises, correct?
Well, you have those step increases that a lot of federal employees don't look on as raises. They're, mm-hmm. they're sort of mini, I don't want to say mini promotions, but they are sort of for federal employees who feel they've been doing their job over a course of time. You get those little bumps to sort of keep you at parity with, you know, what people in the private sector might be making. So I think for a lot of people on the outside, those step increases, those performance bonuses, they look like raises. But for a lot of federal employees, they believe it's just part of their job and what they get for working in the federal government.
Tom, I don't know if you saw this or not. It was in the Post, I believe, this week, certainly last week, and it was talking about the labor market in the Washington area shrinking and being suddenly one of the worst in the country. Several cities were ahead of us in creating new jobs, and they said one of the problems in the Washington area is the reduction in federal employment, which I wasn't aware of, and a reduction in contractors. And they were talking about when you lose a federal job, you lose $67,000 with perks. When you lose a contractor job, you lose more. But that the government is actually shrinking here.
Well, maybe it's shrinking here. It's not shrinking, period, because it spends more money every year, greater than it did the year before. But the workforce is not, I mean, most of the federal workforce, as you have known for decades, is not in the Washington area.
Sure.
And so I didn't read the article, but it could be that a lot of agencies are moving out of D.C., and so you have to look at it regionally.
Yeah, this was interesting because they showed Maryland, Virginia, and the district, and they showed a federal job loss, which surprised me, and I wondered where they went. Was it a part of the BRAC commission? But you're not aware of it.
I think it's just the natural vicissitudes of shifting around of people that happen in the government. And I mean, this is an economically robust area.
Oh, yeah.
Ultimately, I don't think anyone's going to lose a bet on the greater Washington area in terms of employment and housing price increases and so forth. But yeah, there are dips and little fluctuations that happen. But long term, I don't think there's anything hurting in this area.
Well, the media is always happiest when things are going south, so that may be a little bit of that, too. And you said something fascinating before the show, and it just shows that everything comes back to the government and government rules and regulations. This American soldier who walked away from his unit, and we still don't know the details of that yet, Bo Bergdahl, I believe is his name, from Idaho. But he left his unit, was taken prisoner by the Taliban, was kept held for 2 or 3 years. Suddenly there was a swap a couple of months back now, maybe even longer. So he's back in the U.S. He's being, they say, debriefed at some Army base. I'm not sure that he's even seen his parents yet. But you said something about violating the Anti-Deficiency Act. I mean, what's that about?
Well, the Anti-Deficiency Act was a law passed a long time ago, basically preventing agencies from spending money that Congress didn't give them permission to, or to enter into obligations that Congress didn't approve. And because of that, when the Defense Department swapped for Bo Bergdahl, it might have done that. The General Accounting Office, General Accountability Office, Government Accountability Office said that there is a law in the books from the 2014 Defense Act that says the Defense Department and President Obama has to get permission from Congress or written notification of 30 days before doing a prisoner swap. And in this case, they didn't do a notification. And the GAO says because there was no notification, that is in violation of the Anti-Deficiency Act. It was part of an appropriations bill.
So in theory, somebody could be fined or go to jail for this.
Well, the one thing the GAO didn't want to rule on is whether that part of the bill is constitutional, whether Congress overreached when it said that the administration needs to give a notification. So by the letter of the law, the way they read it, yes, there was some violation. There was some law breaking. Whether it will come to someone getting in trouble for it really depends on whether people think it's constitutional not to do that.
Well, that's right. And in fact, we talked to one of the counsels at GAO on my show just earlier this week. And she said, by the way, you were asking, the maximum penalty is $5,000 fine and 2 years in prison. Mm-hmm. That's the potential for breaking the Anti-Deficiency Act. And that would be up to the Justice Department. So, you know, is DOD going to finger somebody? And then is the Justice Department going to go after that person? Not very likely. But they did say the law is clear. And by the way, the GAO also said that two other laws were broken by Defense Department when they did that. One was the 2014 Appropriations Bill, and one was the 2014 Authorization Bill for DOD. They both had provisions. One was like 1353 and 1888 or something. I'm within 25 of what the number of the section was. But both sections said that the president may not move anybody out of Guantanamo Bay, as Andy said, without 30 days notice. So they broke those two laws and the Anti-Deficiency Act. And GAO was pretty unequivocal. I would say these laws are clear. And they thought that the Defense Department's answer or explanation was specious in so many words.
It's fascinating to see how the legislative and the executive branch tangle and use whatever toys and tools they have to get at each other. Need to take a short break here, but we'll be right back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Big sky country, the Great Plains, and now fields and fields of data. In this land of plenty, we've got an abundance of it. If you're in federal IT, your workers need reliable access to that data, and your agency expects you to protect it all, from sea to shining sea. Lucky for you, CDWG is here. We can help you create any kind of storage solution you need, virtualized, cloud, on-premises. Our experts know how to build systems flexible enough to meet your needs and safe enough to keep you at ease, so your data will be secure, your agency will stay compliant, and your workers will have access wherever they may roam. Find out more at cdwg.com/landofplenty. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit cdwg.com to learn about virtual desktop infrastructure solutions from Nutanix that can drive unprecedented simplicity in your data center.
Experts have been talking about the promise of cloud technology for some time now.
The cloud will transform how America works.
You've also heard them talk about its advantages.
The cloud will reduce government costs and improve productivity.
And you've heard this.
The cloud will deliver security across the entire platform.
Now there's a cloud that delivers on those promises. Introducing AT&T Cloud Solutions for Government. Our portfolio of solutions provides agencies the confidence that comes with the security of the AT&T network, with end-to-end integration for greater security, reliability, and performance.
Government agencies will serve the nation confidently using the cloud.
Find out how AT&T Cloud Solutions for Government can give your agency the confidence that comes only with the security of the AT&T network. Visit att.com/gov/cloud. Designed to meet FedRAMP certification. AT&T. Mobilizing your world.
Why do leaders succeed or fail? Why do leaders direct ambitious change? What strategies do leaders use to overcome opposition and win allies? Join host Michael Keegan and Professor Harry Lambright of the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University and author of the IBM Center report, Forging Governmental Change, as they explore leaders and leadership next week on a special edition of The Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. That's next week on The Business of Government Hour.
This hour of news is brought to you by Boeing, delivering the enduring capability and value of the P-8A Maritime Patrol aircraft to the United States Navy, on time and on budget.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases.
We've been working on a vaccine for several years now. The first week in September, we'll start what's called a phase one clinical trial, first time in a human. Ebola has essentially consumed us. Certainly in the Department of Health and Human Services, the CDC, the FDA, and the NIH have been working 24/7 on this.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Hey, Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. I've been talking with Tom Timmon. He's a morning drive anchor here at Federal News Radio. Andy Medici is a senior writer for the Federal Times. And before the break, we were talking about the odd fellows and the way the executive branch and the legislative branch sometimes tangle with each other using whatever tool available. And clearly some members of Congress were unhappy with the prisoner swap, Bo Bergdahl, the Army soldier that went left his unit, was taken hostage, big campaign to get him back. And then there was the prisoner swap, or not prisoner swap, but the releasing the prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. As Tom Timmon pointed out, GAO is all over the executive branch for that. And it's interesting to see how these two fight it out when one does something the other one doesn't like. And it may be, certainly may be political or dramatic, but they will use the economic tools at hand. And we're reminded that the same thing's going on in Texas. You know, Governor Rick Perry fired a top state official for reasons that he deemed good and proper. Now they're going after him, saying his action was illegal. But they're all using sort of obscure little tweaks in the law to get their way. And sometimes honest government people get caught in the way of that. Civil servants are caught. Like if there is someone prosecuted under the Anti-Deficiency Act, which isn't likely, but if it happened in the Bergdahl case, it might very well be a GS-15 who allegedly did something wrong.
And I find that most GS-15s, especially people that are program managers and contracting officers, they get overly cautious, especially in times of continuing resolution. There's a lot of spending discretion they have, but it's complicated because it gets to not just the appropriations law and not just acquisition law, but also apportionment law, which is a whole other area of, you know, making sure the money is there. And so just to stay away from the brink, they cut back on spending pretty far.
To cover themselves.
And so if they are spending money under some politically driven directive, then, that the unfortunate result is they might get hung out to dry if what the politicals did didn't go out too well.
Well, I've seen people testify that they would not do something because of fear of violating the Anti-Deficiency Act, and everybody immediately says, what's that? And then programs are affected by it because of the presence of this thing.
I think that's right, and I think in this case, though, a lot of people are banking on the optics of the situation. This isn't someone purchasing a building or running a program over budget or even writing checks to themselves or something far worse. It's, you know, an American prisoner of war, and that they use the money to get him out of captivity. And I think that's what a lot of people are banking on is that situation and those optics. And it's going to be hard to argue that even if it was against the law, and this is the weird part about it, even though it was against the law, Tom's right. You know, the Justice Department's probably not going to bring charges. And at the end of the day, there's an American soldier who, right or wrong, you know, for whatever reason he was captured, he's home now. And right. I think for a lot of people, that's enough.
Right. And that's interesting and sometimes frightening, too, that even if there's a bona fide violation of the law, the executive will say, we're not going to prosecute, period. Next case.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's only so much that any prosecutorial staff can do,
yep.
And sometimes stuff spills over the sides.
We're seeing that in the marijuana laws all over the country now, the enforcement of them. Tom, Frank Wolf, Republican from Virginia, Jim Moran, Democrat from Virginia, both retiring from Congress. In terms of length of service alone, these guys are giants. They are among the longest serving members, certainly in the Washington area, which they represent, and for the federal community, the retiree community, and the contractor community, these guys have been giants. Their districts arguably have more federal workers than any other, along with Steny Hoyer and Elijah Cummings. But they have huge numbers of feds. They understand the problems of feds. Wolf is a particularly a very compassionate man and very committed to what he's doing. Jim Moran, even though he is a, quote, lame duck, has been speaking out on behalf of federal workers and others. Will we ever see their like again? And what does this do to the coalition in Congress?
Well, it's hard to say what it'll do to the coalition, whether we will see this type again or not. I don't know. It doesn't seem like that type of congressman is grown anymore. You know, I go back and forth between what is good, having long-term institutional knowledge, and these guys, as you mentioned, do have tremendously deep understanding of federal issues and federal employment and so forth and the interplay of all of that. And that's valuable, you know, when crafting legislation. On the other hand, a relative newcomer, I guess it's 3, 4, 5 terms now, Jerry Connolly, who replaced Tom Davis, different party, but has come up to speed very quickly and has a very good understanding of things like federal procurement and those issues that affect the contractors and the employees in his area. On the other hand, you know, there's the original notion of Congress, which was, you know, the farmer legislators coming to town and going home.
Yeah.
And that still exists in some places in the country. I started out my career in New Hampshire, where the senators and the state reps really did mostly go home at night.
Yeah.
And they had 30 or 60 day sessions, and they would go home to their businesses. There was a woman that I knew in Ringe, New Hampshire, who with her husband owned a gun shop. His name was Perry White, like
Superman's editor.
And she was a state senator and would come home, mm-hmm. you know, after being done there in Concord. So, and New Hampshire worked just fine. I mean, it was a really well-run state and low taxes and all this kind of thing. So, but we don't have the democracy and the republic that we did 260 years ago or 250 years ago. But still, you wonder, you know, maybe do we need 30 years of one guy for one district anymore?
There's a theory that the decline of democracy started with air conditioning, because Washington is such a hot, sticky city in the summer, and they used to go home for the summer and do that sort of business. And now they stick around because it's more fun here than back where they come from.
Well, you see pictures of Harry Truman or Franklin Roosevelt sitting in the White House before the 1950s renovation, sitting in a wool double-breasted suit, or, you know, a vested suit, as the case might be, sitting in the Oval Office sometime in August. You wonder how the heck they stood it.
Well, Lincoln had a summer home at the Soldiers' Home.
The old Soldiers' Home, yeah.
Out of there. But, Andy, a year ago today, if you will, the topic du jour was sequestration. We had to first look it up. What is this thing? Where did it come from? What does it mean? What's the sequester? And then suddenly everybody was quoting it. Everybody was an authority on it. It was a big deal. People got sent home, and they were paid in this case, but they weren't when they were furloughed. But it seemed to impact everything the government was doing, not only people, but the Navy was talking about mothballing ships, and everybody was talking about cutbacks. I'm not sure that I've heard the word this year.
I think a lot of people wanted to forget it, actually, Mike. You know, sequestration was not a plan A or a plan B. It was a plan C. You know, years ago, we were talking about grand bargains and great compromises, and sequestration came about because Congress said, well, if we don't come up with a certain amount of budget cuts, we're just going to cut a whole bunch of money equally across the board between security and non-security agencies. And everyone agreed at the time, this would never happen. The Congress will come up with something. And guess what? They did not. And we had, you know, some sequestration, and those cuts hurt. And so Congress passed sort of a mitigation for a couple of years. And that took some of the weight off the agencies. Although there have been cuts and stuff that, you know, you and Tom have covered over the last couple of years, there have been pretty severe cuts. But that comes back in 2016, and Congress hasn't really made any moves to do anything for it.
So have you ever seen those pictures sometimes you see of someone who lost 1,000 pounds? You see those, and they're usually, when they're at their biggest, they're laying in bed, and they have a severe and compelling need to lose a lot of weight very quickly. In some ways, the government is like that. And so the solution Congress comes up with is, well, let's cut off your thumb, you know, to lose weight and trim the rest of your fingernails. And, you know, the real problem is the entitlement programs. And every year, the reports come out from the trustees of Social Security and the Congressional Budget Office report regularly. There's one coming out this morning, says that this is happening. That's really the engine of future deficits and future financial difficulties, and yet they just never go near it.
That, you know, that might be one argument. Lauren Larson wants us to take a break here, but that might be an argument for term limits, is you don't need to keep kicking the can down the road because you know you won't be here in 6-12 years. But take a short break here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Our federal employees have played an important role in upholding our nation's values and beliefs. GEICO would like to recognize their contributions and wish all federal employees and their families a very happy and safe Labor Day weekend. For over 75 years, GEICO's been helping federal employees save money on their car insurance, and they'd like to do the same for you. So if you're a federal employee or belong to a federal association like BIG, FLIOA, or NARF, find out how much you could save with a federal employee discount. Don't wait. Go to GEICO.com today or call 1-800-947-AUTO to get a fast, free rate quote. That's GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. Keep all your weekends safe and get peace of mind with GEICO Auto Insurance. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
A high-performing government depends on an engaged, well-prepared, well-trained workforce. As the expert in federal workforce development, Management Concepts has been your trusted partner to improve the performance of teams and organizations worldwide. Elevate your federal agency into a high-performing organization by investing in your workforce of the future now. You have a vision for your organization. Management Concepts can help you achieve it. Learn more at managementconcepts.com/radio.
ServiceNow is the enterprise IT cloud company. Our cloud-based service modernizes and transforms enterprise IT. Not only has ServiceNow taken the service management market by storm, we are also the fastest-growing cloud company in the history of cloud. We modernize IT in four ways. One, we use a cloud delivery model that was built for the internet. Two, we provide an engaging and intuitive user experience. Three, we offer a wide range of service operations and business management applications built on a single platform. Four, together, these applications create a single system of record that allow IT and departments like facilities, HR, and procurement to extend existing applications and create custom applications. Join us on November 5th to hear from government presenters on how they use the ServiceNow platform to automate services across agency departments. Visit federalnowforum.com to register for free. That's federalnowforum.com to register today.
Here's Sunny Hashmi, Chief Information Officer at the General Services Administration, on Ask the CIO with Jason Miller, sponsored by Symantec.
VDI helps us get there, and it also helps us be more secure because all the patching and so forth is happening on the back end one time, done once and done well, rather than every desktop. Some might be out the network, some might be inside the network, have to be updated. So it helps us do all of that better and ultimately reduces the complexity of IT and thereby reduces the cost of IT.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Your mission is more complex and demanding than ever. That's why Symantec is committed to the security and availability of the information and systems you rely on to achieve your goals. Symantec makes it easy to discover what's in your network and provides the tools to continuously assess and manage your security posture. Symantec's intelligent security solutions help you identify threats in real time so you can keep your information safe. Do it simply, safely, and quickly. Do it all. Learn more at Symantec.com/do-it-all.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Accessing Federal News Radio from your iPhone has never been easier. Go to federalnewsradio.com on your phone and click the plus button to add a Federal News Radio shortcut directly to your home screen.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Tom Timmon from Federal News Radio and Andy Medici with the Federal Times. And we were talking about term limits and the pros and cons. And I think in my case, I tend to agree with the last person that talked to me about it. But it seems to me there must be a way.
Well, that's right. It's they're there too long, and look what the abuses they perpetrate, and they always come in poor and leave rich, and so on. And then the counter answer is, well, that's why we have elections every 2 years or 4 years or 6 years, and yet you send them back. So I don't know the answer either.
Yeah, we haven't had a Henry Clay or a Daniel Webster lately, I don't think.
Not since the Whigs.
Right. Hey, turning to the alphabet agencies, the IRS, Department of Veterans Affairs, VA, Homeland Security, really different problems. IRS allegedly targeting conservative groups, particularly the Tea Party, some very damning testimony, both sides, and I saw some of it last night on CNN, and if you turned into that for the first time, you would be horrified at some of the things they were saying. The VA, the best thing they can say is apparently they didn't kill anybody, that these delays didn't cause any deaths, but there's always the but. And then Homeland Security with this security breach to the point where they sever their relationship with the company that had been doing some of their security work and background. What do you guys make of this?
Well, business as usual. No, that would be cynical.
Yeah.
No, the VA is big, and again, with bigness comes problems. And one of the problems is that they set unrealistic expectations for themselves with respect to how long it takes to get an appointment. And this has been going on for years and years. This didn't start with Eric Shinseki or any of the secretaries before him. This is an old story. I mean, to some extent, if you want to call a specialist, say, in a nice practice in one of those buildings in Bethesda or Oakton where they have nice doctor's offices and you need a specialist, sometimes the average citizen has to wait 3 months to see somebody or 4 months to see somebody. And so when you set unrealistic, say 2 weeks, then you can't meet it, and then one thing builds to another, and next thing you know, the whole system is out of control with respect to scheduling. And the irony is that in those places around where this all originated, with the Phoenix VA medical complex, they now have healthcare contractors providing service, because under the law, if a veteran is 40 miles away, they can use a private contractor. The VA's contract requirement is an appointment within 3 days, which is 75% better than VA promised itself but never could do. So there you have it with VA.
Andy, what about the IRS? Where's this going?
Honestly, I think my thoughts on that is that it's going to eventually fizzle out. We talked about the GAO and Bo Bergdahl earlier in the show, and I think it all boils down to who's willing to do what and why. And even though you're right, there were some horrific things, that may or may not have happened that both sides are charging the other with doing, it all comes down to, did someone commit a crime? Is there someone willing to prosecute that crime? Or at the end of the day, is this just adding to the constant stream of things that we hear from agencies and from members of Congress about agencies? And will it just eventually fizzle out? Will we be on the show 2 years from now wondering whatever happened to that to that IRS incident, and did anything ever happen to anyone involved?
Right, because you've got now the one side that says the administration is saying this is a local problem. It's in Cincinnati, Covington, Kentucky, the IRS there. It was isolated. It's been taken out of context. It's no big deal. And on the other side, you say this is an assault. This is a major assault by the not only the government, not only the IRS, but the EPA is involved, the Justice Department. I think one person testified yesterday that he was visited by the ATF, and they were laying out all these problems if you continue to push for a tax exempt status or whatnot. So it's pretty scary stuff. Tom, you think it's going to go away?
Well, I don't know. Unfortunately, it looks like it may go away. My personal feeling about this one is that it really does need a bipartisan commission or a special prosecutor, because the allegations are just too serious. And there's just enough evidence, I think, that Lois Lerner might have really been a bad actor. And, you know, I'm not saying this from a political standpoint, but I just think that what is alleged to have happened and what there is some email evidence that did happen is way worse than what happened during the Nixon administration in its alleged use or purported use of trying to, you know, sic the IRS on its enemies, because the IRS said, heck, we're not going to go along with that. But now there seem to be elements of the IRS that would. Not to say that IRS is totally corrupt. Again, it's a large organization. Things can happen. But I think that it is something that probably should be looked at thoroughly for the IRS's own sake, because once the IRS... It cannot risk losing legitimacy in the eyes of the public. As Andy said earlier, we don't like taxes, but at least if we know and are confident they're administered fairly, then you've got legitimacy in the system, and you can always change the rates through Congress.
Okay, got the last word. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Andy. Lauren Larson says we must go, so we will go. We'll see you all here next week. Have a good week until next Wednesday.